Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Illini guy Mike. I've got Matt Stevens with us, Illini staff writer who covers the Illini football team. And we're going to talk a little bit about a couple subjects today. We're going to start off with a preview of the Illini game against Nebraska this week. And then we are going to go into the now infamous Zoom call, which featured the Big Ten, ACC, Pac-12. Alliance. So you can already tell by my voice that ought to be entertaining. So let's start off though first. Let's get into some serious stuff. Matt has obviously been covering the team and has watched the transition from Lovie Smith to Coach Bielma. And as we are looking at what's going to happen this Saturday, where do you think the Illini football team is right now? How are they coming into this game from a mindset standpoint, from what you've been able to glean? And I know that they've kept everything top secret, but what are you thinking as a reporter?
Well, what I think is, and it's going to be part of my game preview, Mike, is that I think one of the more interesting elements of this game, and I'm just so pleasantly excited that we get to talk about a college football game for the first time in a while.
Yep.
That'll actually be attended by people. Instead of just me, because last year was just strange and awkward and bad in so many different ways. But I think one of the more interesting elements of this game is tempo, Mike. And I think the reason I say that is because I actually think this offense that Brett Bielema was going to showcase and Tony Peterson, the offensive coordinator, is going to showcase on Saturday is actually going to want to go faster than each of those two men have ever showcased their offenses going in their previous stops, especially Bielema and his previous stops at Arkansas and Wisconsin. I actually think they want to pick the tempo up a little bit, maybe run a lot more, a little bit more out of the gun than people are anticipating, and actually playing a little bit faster than people are anticipating because – one, they have such experience up front at the offensive line and at the quarterback and running back positions. And I think that they feel so confident about that, that they feel like they can pick up the pace and not stub their toe with penalties or turnovers or things like that, just because they have so much veteran presence at that spot, at those three key spots, which is offensive line, quarterback, and running back. On the flip side, I've actually read some things over the spring and then especially in fall camp that Scott Frost actually wants to slow down what Nebraska has been doing. And I think over his first 3 years, which have not gone splendidly in Lincoln, he has realized two things. One, I think he's finally realized he can't outrun Big Ten defenses like he thought he could when he got there initially. And two, going faster sometimes means that they're actually going to invite turnovers and mistakes more than actually good things happening because the defense is confused. A lot of the time over the last couple of years, especially this 2020 season, and especially the last time these two teams hooked up, Nebraska tried to go super, super fast. And five turnovers later, they realized that that wasn't the plan they needed to use at all. And you're going to see a much more physically imposing and ball control style out of Nebraska. And I think you might actually – I still think you're going to see ball control physical Illinois football under Brett Bielema, but I think it could try to maybe go a little bit faster than he's implemented in the past. So I think the drastic differences of tempo that people are going to come into the stadium with thinking and then actually see during the game is fascinating to me, because if that's true, if I'm correct and if it's true – It's kind of a contrast in styles a little bit, and might actually make both teams kind of come back to the median of how tempo football is supposed to work. And that's the first thing I think that's interesting about this game is who gets to establish what the pace of this game is going to be, how this game is going to look. And, if Illinois is in this game, say mid third quarter, are they going to be able to respond with, big plays and quite honestly, not stubbing their toe and making mistakes on both sides of the ball, like typically happened in the Lovie Smith and Tim Beckman era? I think that that's something that Illinois fans are desperately looking for, but I do think that early on, you're going to see a lot of interesting things out of Brett Bielema that people might not initially think define him based off of his previous experiences at Wisconsin and Arkansas.
So if he comes out and runs an up-tempo offense, do you think there's any chance that Scott Frost is in his preparations has decided that, hey, you know what, we should really prepare for the what if Bielma does something he's never done before?
I think that Scott Frost is looking at everything that Tony Peterson has ever put together. And they did play fast at App State.
Okay.
And so that's something I think – I don't think Scott Frost and his defensive staff would be totally taken off, you know, off guard with that. But I do think that for people that think, you know, I'm just pointing out the idea that I just don't think Brett Bielema is going to huddle every single play. And I don't think that they're going to try to have 12-minute drives. You know, I just think there's an element to this run game that I think can work, especially in the newfound RPO world that we now live in college football, where you might be able to go fast and still have power football be, you know, your bread and butter. And I watched it with Auburn. I watched it, Gus Malzahn run power football and still try to get 70, 75 snaps a football game and do it in a very, very quick pace. I mean, the joke around Auburn was when Gus wound his arm and basically that was the signal of, hey, yeah, run that again. Like, I'm not calling another play, run that again. I'm not saying Brett Bielema will do that, but this idea that Brett Bielema is this caveman that wants to run these 9-minute drives and have 15 play, you know, carve out the entire first quarter with your offense, keep the defense on, you know, on the sideline kind of thing. I'm not exactly saying he's going to shy away from that at certain instances, especially if Illinois has a lead, but I think you're going to see a faster paced Illinois offense than people may be anticipating, again, based off of what Brett Bielema has done. I don't think it'll catch Scott Frost off guard, but I do think that it will. Scott has better be very, very aware of being able to make mid-game adjustments, because that's the whole point of the secrecy going on in Champaign. And he's publicly acknowledged that they're going to have to make some adjustments on the fly, probably on both sides of the ball, just to counter exactly what Brett Bielema and Tony Peterson and Ryan Walters are going to put together on Saturday.
Well, it's interesting because obviously I don't know Coach B personally, have had the pleasure of interviewing him. And, you know, of course, we had that media day where we got a chance to listen to his football 101, which I think the man could make a ton of money if he decided he wanted to put that presentation into some format that could be, you know, trademarked and put out there. But I will say, I get the impression that Coach B is very proud of his record over the years, and I think that's justified. But I also get this impression that the 51-year-old Brett Bielema is pretty certain that if he got a hold of that young, strong 35-year-old in a coaching game, that he could take him, that the 51-year-old would take him apart. And I think he keeps applying lessons, and he really refers to that a lot about things that he's added to his repertoire, to his toolbox. You know, I go back to that thing where I've got a buddy of mine who, you know, he compares, you know, he says, you know, tools. He goes, I don't love my tools. My tools are important for me to accomplish my job, but I don't have an affinity for a screwdriver that I'm going to try to screw in a nail. I use the appropriate tool for the appropriate job. And the impression I get from Coach Bielema is that his tool chest is a lot better stocked now. Not that he wasn't a great coach when he was younger, but he's got a lot more tricks that maybe, you know, maybe that 35-year-old who was so successful wouldn't have access to, because some of those lines on his face and some of those scars are earned, you know, with experiences. And maybe I'm getting too melodramatic on it, but I do think there's going to be this might be a new page in his book, and you're really adding to the feeling that I have on that.
Yeah, I would say two things. One is that I agree with you in the sense that everything I've known about Brett has been power football and a standard 4-3 defense that just kind of keeps everything in front of you. He didn't really adapt this 3-4 defense and this odd man front concept until his final years at Arkansas, when he started to realize, again, these tempo offenses need to be countered with something, and what I'm doing is just not working, not going to work in the future. And so he hires Paul Rhodes immediately at Arkansas to say, hey, build me a 3-4 defense that can go attack that backfield before they get a chance to attack me. Then he goes to the NFL and deals with Belichick, odd man front guy, and you know, his time with the New York Giants, odd man front team. So that allowed him to adapt that. The second thing I'll tell you is in listening to what you just said about Bielema, I draw back to one of my best friends who's the head baseball coach at Auburn. His name is Butch Thompson. And Butch used to always tell me, Matt, confidence is skill acquisition. Nothing more, nothing less. But confidence is a product of skill acquisition. And I do think that the 51-year-old Brett Bielema has acquired skills that are very, very related to his job that the 36-year-old, 35-year-old Brett Bielema did not have. I think the other thing that the 51-year-old Brett Bielema has going for him is that the 35-year-old Brett Bielema was really, really arrogant and thought he was smarter than everybody else in the country, especially smarter than the guy that was standing on the opposite sideline than him. The 51-year-old Brett Bielema knows the guy that's standing on the opposite sideline of him is probably not any less smart than he is. And this isn't a quiz bowl. And this isn't, I don't have anything, you know, magical on my side of the sideline that he doesn't have. This is about execution. And this is about getting kids to properly understand every single time they line up and every single time they have an opportunity to do something, they need to be able to execute it. And they need to be able to confidently execute it because I've given them the skills to do that. It's not really complicated. What you learned, Mike, when we both sat there and watched his football 101 is that Brett's approach to a lot of things is, look, guys, this isn't complicated. Like, I'm going to give this to you in a way that it's going to make you understand it, because sometimes it's not quadratic equations here, you know.
Yeah.
We're not dealing with, you know, rocket propulsion here. Like, this is stuff that I can teach you over an afternoon, and then I want you to just put it in the back of your mind so that when you need it, you'll be able to reference back to it. You're talking about somebody like Tony Peterson, who is his job, Mike, is to basically make Brandon Peters as confident as he possibly can be, so that on Saturday he can have the kind of afternoon that Illinois is going to need in order to win this football game. And that's part of being a good coach. It's part of being a good teacher. And that's where I think Illinois is in a great position potentially to pull off this upset on Saturdays, because I do believe this staff has a lot of good teachers and a lot of teachers that have seen this type of thing happen, where a team that's not projected to do much of anything at all do something pretty spectacular. And I think that's something that has Illinois has in its whole card right now. I think that they have the ability to draw back to four defensive coordinators on its staff to be able to figure out how to slow down what Scott Frost wants to do offensively. And trust me, with Adrian Martinez now again under center, they're a dynamic offense. Tony Peterson and George McDonald and Corey Patterson, I think they have the ability to be able to figure out how to maneuver their way around a Nebraska defense that returns 10 starters. This is the most talented and I know experienced roster that Scott Frost has ever had at Nebraska. And I've seen Scott when he knows he has a good team, or at least he thinks he knows he has a good team. And I've known his kind of tics and behaviors when that happens. And what he's doing right now in Lincoln tells me he thinks he's got a pretty good football team. Everything else around Lincoln right now might be, you know, Baghdad Bob and screaming where all is well, you know, like,
yeah.
But on the field, you know, 100 by 53.5, he feels like he's got a pretty darn good football team. And whether he's right or whether he's wrong, we're going to figure that out pretty quickly, because Nebraska's got a pretty daunting early season in front of them, but I do think they have the pieces to have a pretty decent year under Scott Frost. And I know that the team in orange and blue thinks that they can pull this off on Saturday. And I don't think it's out of the question that they can.
Yeah, I think this is a very interesting game. I obviously, you know, football coaches have a certain genetic DNA. So neither of these guys wants to even think about their season after they lose this first game. That's just the way a football coach thinks. But I will tell you that if Scott Frost loses this first game, looking at the schedule he has coming up, he's got to be going, oh, my goodness gracious, you know, do we get a win before Oklahoma? You know, I mean, there's some nerves there.
I don't mean to cut you off, Mike, but the simple way to put it is that if Scott Frost loses in Champaign on Saturday, he's in trouble.
Yeah.
Definitely in trouble. If Brett Bielema loses on Saturday in Champaign, he's in no trouble. Like,
no, I agree with that. Although don't tell Coach, you know, B that, because
he's going to be
serious as a heart attack. But
that's not the attitude you want Bielema to walk into on
exactly
either. But it's the reality of this could look like a team that's ready to make a rebound and quickly and still go 0-1 after the first week.
Right.
And you still feel like, oh, there's things to put together here. The other thing, Mike, just to get out of the way, and you mentioned it early on, is that we haven't been able to see much. We've been kept away from so much. I can't remember a season opener that I've covered at any school over – I've done this since 2009 now, where I have been more – I have no – not I have no earthly idea, but I have – way more questions going into Saturday than I've ever had.
Shades of Belichick.
Yeah, I there are questions on the first drive on both sides of the ball that I'll have answered, and I'll go, wow, I didn't expect that. Mike, I'll give you a perfect example. And you know, on our boards and on our site, whenever this goes up, there will be like a depth chart. I just did a preliminary depth chart for fun because Illinois is not going to provide one, and neither is Nebraska.
Right. Right.
I have no earthly idea who's going to catch the punt. I have Caleb Griffin because I've seen a photo of him catching a punt in practice. That's the only reason. I'll give you guys a clue on the line, guys, right now. It's the only reason I put him on there. I have no earthly idea who's going to catch a punt when Nebraska has to punt. I have no earthly idea, like, what Illinois is going to do defensively exactly from the standpoint of they keep telling us there's going to be the star, but – is a star a safety? Is he a linebacker? I have no idea. I have no idea what their plan is for that. I have no idea. I have some idea. It's a 50-50 proposition, but I don't exactly know what they're going to do at right guard. And that's the one hole in the offensive line that I want to know the answer to. It's either going to be Julian Pearl or it's Alex Billstrom. And if it's one or the other, that tells me a lot about what Bart Miller thinks about one, both of those individuals, and two, how he feels about his depth at offensive line, because if he feels like he can have Julian Pearl be his swing guy for maybe an Alex Palcheski, who's maybe not still 100%, I don't know, practicing. He's full go this week. I've seen pictures.
Yeah.
But, you know, that tells me a lot, too, about how good Bart Miller feels about his depth. What is Illinois going to do in the backfield? Meaning they have five guys they feel like they can put back there behind Brandon Peters and hand them a football and have success. The order in which they assign carries and plays and snaps, I have no idea how that's going to work. And we're going to learn some things. Trust me, because we haven't seen a whole lot. We're going to learn some injury things, I think, coming on Saturday. I mean, I really do. I think some guys are going to have nicks and they're not going to start. And we're going to figure that out really quickly. But, you know, all of these questions are going to get answered by you, the fans sitting in the stands, exactly the same time that I'm sitting in the press box. This is not something where I'm trying to hold back because the Illinois has asked me to, or somebody in the program has asked me to. I don't know the answers. I'm never going to lie to you folks. I don't know the answers, and we'll know them all at the same time, right at kickoff at noon. I promise you.
Well, and the other thing that's neat is if you are IlliniGuys.com subscriber, you can take advantage of the game room. And I'm going to take a little step out of podcast here to let you know that the game room is an awesome feature. It's kind of like an old style supercharged chat room. And what you get is you get a ton of guys in there or gals who are subscribers who are in there, and they're sharing their thoughts right as it goes. But Matt will be in there, and Brad will be in there, and I'll be in there. Kedrick will be in there. There'll be a lot of thoughts going through there. And you really get some good, good knowledge. And then you have guys like you might be dropped in by Craig Swope or David Williams or some of the Illini legends from the past. So there's that thing is also a great way to go through it, because as the game unfolds, you get things from Matt that you can't get, but it's like you're sitting talking to Matt. And so it really adds to the texture of a game. You know, last year, particularly in basketball, you know, Brad would talk about, you know, Brad Sturdy would talk about maybe, you know, something that's going on Illini's defense, or maybe a certain way a team's defending Io that your average fan isn't going to be able to spot quite so quickly. And it adds that texture to the game, and it lets you know what's going on with the coaches. So that's only for IlliniGuys.com subscribers. And certainly we try to give you as much as we can with the Eye on the Illini, the Sturdy for 30 podcasts, and also what we have when we bring in, you know, the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular radio show. But some of this stuff right in the moment, right there live, you know, when Matt texts or chats in the game room, and he puts down something that he's seen, you know, you get it the minute you're seeing it. And I think that's going to really add to the game experience, especially when we don't really know what we're going to see.
I'm excited for it, Mike, because you and Brad have both told me about how popular a feature it was for basketball games this past season. This is our first implementation of it for football. And quite frankly, I'm just really excited about not having to give it away for free anymore on Twitter. Like,
yeah.
And I'm excited for it. And I think I hope that it becomes a value tool on Saturdays for my coverage, but I think that it will, based off of how popular it was for basketball, but I'm excited for it.
Yeah. Basketball, we kept having to ratchet it up. It was kind of like the Zoom calls, you know, we keep thinking we've got enough, seats on our Zoom calls, and then boom, we're all full. And then it's like, wow, we got to figure out a way to max that or get that up to the next level. So let's talk about if I was to tell you that Illinois is going to win this Saturday, what would you tell me needs to happen for Illinois to come up with the victory?
Well, I mean, not to sound like the new head coach, but they need to play tough, smart, dependable football. And what does that mean? Well, not to go back to the previous coach, but winning the turnover battle would really help. It would really help a lot. And getting off the field on third down would really, really help a lot, which is something that Illinois has not done typically against Nebraska, even in the game they won last year.
Yep.
They had to rely on those five turnovers to win that football game, quite frankly. And that's okay. Like, I mean, you need takeaways. You need turnovers.
Smoke them if you got them, right?
Right. You know, I mean, they're going to need that to happen no matter if Lovie Smith or Bill Belichick or, you know, Brett Bielema was on the sideline, trust me. But I would think forcing Nebraska into mistakes is going to be a huge key for this Illinois defense. That's the first thing. And I think the way you do that is going to be different, because I think that they're going to come from so many different angles blitz-wise on Saturday. I just get that feeling. These outside linebackers that are working with Kevin Kane, they're not going backwards. They're going forwards. I mean, all of them. And I think that they're having – you're going to see Adrian Martinez do a lot of pointing and identifying guys pre-snap. I really feel that way. And that's why I feel like it's going to be Nebraska's advantage maybe to slow things down so that he can take advantage of what I'm looking at before I have to snap this football and actually run this play. I also think Brandon Peters needs to be at his best. And that's That's something that Illinois fans are going to grit their teeth about. But last year, Brandon was pretty darn good in Lincoln after having sat out for a month. Yep. And if you get that performance out of Brandon again, Illinois can win. And the reason I feel that way, Mike, is because Illinois fans, I believe, are going to have to start getting used to a fundamental thing in terms of offense when watching this Illinois team, especially under Brett Bielema. The guy under center is not probably going to be the primary focus on offense, especially in year two and in year three and in year four. It's going to be the guy behind the guy taking the snap, and that's at running back. All Brandon Peters has to do, and I say all, but it's a really important job, is run the offense, play with confidence, and not throw the ball to the other team, not create momentum shifts where they don't need to be there. Right. And understanding, again, I'm going to use a Tommy Tuberville phrase from Auburn, live to punt sometimes. Like, if we can all live to punt sometimes, we're going to be in a good spot. And I do think that Illinois is going to have trouble with Adrian Martinez. I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I do. I think that they have a lot of weapons. And I think that they have – although I won't say that. I think they have a good offensive line in front of him, a physical good offensive line in front of him. And I think the weapons are unproven, though. So I think Adrian's going to have to get used to that. But he's a talented player. And so this Illinois defense is going to have to wrangle him in more than one way too, because Adrian can take off and be a really, really good athlete as well and create some havoc that way. So those would be my three keys, is win the turnover battle, get a good performance out of Brandon Peters, and be able to fluster Adrian Martinez with whatever blitz package this Ryan Walters, Kevin Kane, Andy Boo, Brett Bielema defense can throw at him in this odd man front. And I think all of those things are possible. It's just, I think Illinois is going to need all of them in order to pull this off. Like, this is not a situation in which Illinois rolls into a game feeling like they have more talent than the other team on the other sideline.
Right, right.
I think they have just as much experience. I just don't know if they have as much physicality and as much talent. Especially the good news for Illinois is that I think in the skill positions on the outside, on the perimeter, they're just as inexperienced as Nebraska is. Like, and so that's a good thing. But I'm interested in just seeing and the last X factor, I think, is that this defense has to be in perfect communication. And that's going to be really, really hard, I think, because this is a new scheme. Everybody's learning it at exactly the same time. And that secondary is going to get tested. And beyond what Illinois has, I think they have proper veteran leadership with Sidney Brown and Quan Martin, Tony Adams, Devin Witherspoon on the outside. They just have no depth, Mike, beyond that. And I'm interested to see how, like, Aaron Henry, the defensive backs coach, rotates his guys in and out to try to slow down Nebraska's defense, because his secondary is going to get tested, because they just have no depth behind the four primary guys that they want to put out there.
Yeah, and I also think that the offensive line is going to have to play up to advertised levels. You know, if they go out and they're as good as they look on paper, I think that gives, you know, I have yet to see a quarterback go, you know what, I don't want to play behind that line because they protect me too much. Right. And if they can open up some holes, and they can give him an extra half second to three quarters of a second, then that's the difference between a rushed pass and the turnovers and, you know, stepping into the ball and throwing it where you want it to go. And I'm really hoping that that offensive line can do that. And I will tell you, wherever Bielema goes, a good offensive line shows up. So I'm hopeful that some of that good luck and that hard work and some of the things that he brings to the table, and obviously an excellent offensive line coach, you know, and Bart Miller makes a big difference as well. And we'd love, I'm really hoping we see that come to fruition.
Mike, and when you've got more combined starts than anybody in the Big Ten going into this 2021 season on the offensive line, you better be pretty good. You better be able to rely on guys like Doug Kramer. You better be able to rely on Verdarian Lowe. If he's healthy, you better be able to rely on Alex Palcheski.
Yep.
And I'm telling you that at the FCS level, before he came to Illinois, Blake Gerasotti was a darn good guard and center at Wofford. I mean, it was a primary wing T running offense. So
yeah.
They have the personnel, I think, in terms of experience. This offensive line has not gone out and just absolutely freaking dominated somebody to the point in which Illinois just physically was the better football team in quite some time. Now's the time to do it. And you've got two co-captains on this offensive line. And yeah, you're right, Mike. They need to show up on Saturday big time.
Yeah, that team, and especially, you know, there's really nothing, you know, anybody who's played sports, and I don't care if you're playing tiddlywinks or you're playing football or what have you, there's nothing more energizing than going out there and dominating and enforcing your will on the other team. And let's hope that the offensive line can do that, because I think they'll have a really good time.
Yeah, up the middle, Mike, I don't think Illinois is hurting for experience. When you talk about what I would call the roommates, you call Doug Kramer, you call Brandon Peters, and you call Chase Brown.
Yep.
Those are the guys that I think that Illinois needs to rely on up the middle. It doesn't matter what sport you're talking about, but on Saturday they've got to show up, and they've got to show up big.
So I will ask you, have you, I know we're going to do picks
right
for the Illini guys as a group. Are you prepared to put a pick out there yet? Or is that something that our readers are just going to need to wait for to see where we think?
I'll put it out there now.
Okay.
It won't change in our staff predictions. Here's the deal, Mike. I think that Nebraska is going to win this football game. And I actually think, shockingly, Vegas actually has this one right. And I'll take Nebraska by 6, 30 to 24. Like, that's kind of what I'm thinking. You know, and I struggle with this because I struggle with this one, Mike, and I'll tell you why, is because, and I think I've said this on previous podcasts or on the radio show, I can't remember which, or maybe both. This game is the tipping point for Illinois' 2021 season. I know it's really stupid to say that on August 28th, but Mike, if they win this football game, then I can start to go through a schedule and go, yeah, I can see 6 wins. Like,
right, exactly.
That's the way I see this. Right now, Mike, we're 3-4 days out. I don't see 6 wins. I don't see Illinois being at that level yet. I see Illinois still being in transition. If they win on Saturday, that transition gets sped up real quick. And then I have been a big advocate, Mike, and you know I have been, on let me watch the opener and then I'll have a full assessment of what I'm about to see.
Yeah, you've been consistent on that.
I don't think Illinois is going to win this football game, but they can. I'm not going to walk. This is not for the older generation of Illini guys who are subscribers on our site, Mike, and I think you'll appreciate this. This is not how I felt in 1990 when Colorado came to Illinois, and I thought, there is no way on God's green earth that Illinois is going to win this football game today. There is not a chance in any shape and form that Illinois is going to knock off the number one team in the country. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Sure enough, they did. And I think I was shocked. And I think a lot of people in that stadium were shocked. I think the only one that wasn't was John Makovic, like the guy in the tie, right?
Yep.
I'm not going to be shocked if Illinois wins this football game. They are talented enough, they are experienced enough, and they have enough good players. I just think Nebraska has a lot more physicality on both sides of the football, in the sense that I also think they have more confidence, I would think, in the guy, finally have more confidence in the guy that's going to be under center, in Adrian Martinez. And if Adrian Martinez is one of the best quarterbacks in this league, and I still feel like he is, when he puts it all together and he doesn't make silly mistakes, then Nebraska needs to win this football game. But if they continue to stub their toe and have, you know, costly penalties and head-scratching mistakes like they have the first 3 years of Scott Frost's tenure, guess what? They're going to leave Champaign 0-1. I just don't think that's going to happen. But again, I'm not predicting a Nebraska blowout by any means, and I'm not going to be shocked if Illinois wins this football game.
Well, 6 points. I mean, that's a good close game, and I think
Illinois is going to be in this for four quarters. I'll tell you that right now. I don't think it's going to be a game where Illinois has to come back and suddenly you look at the scoreboard and go, oh, well, it wasn't that bad. You know, No. I think Illinois is going to be in this game for four quarters. I really do.
Oh, that would be great for the Memorial Stadium crowd. And, of course, for those of you who listen to our podcast or are members of the site, this will be the first sighting of all the Illini guys in one place since the pandemic started. So we'll have quite a crew there come Saturday with Larry Smith is going to be there along with Brad Sturdy. Matt Stevens obviously is going to be there. Kedrick Prince is going to be there. I'll be there. We'll have even our new social media person will be there. Patrick Quinn will be there. So, I mean, it's literally going to be like the gang's all here, so to speak. So I think that's pretty exciting. I think we'll also have Kirkland Chappelle. It will be in the crowd, I believe. And I think Steve Sturm as well. So, I mean, it's going to be a full boat of Illini guys all over the place. And so when we show up in force, Illinois tends to win. So we got our fingers crossed. It'll be a great opener. But that's a segue into – so we've talked about a very serious subject that we're both optimistic about. So now it's time to now it's time to go to the sublime. Big Ten, the ACC, and the Pac-12 announced a rebel alliance to stop the evil empire of the SEC or something like that.
Yeah, you're going Star Wars. I thought you might go wrestling on me.
Yeah, like, well, you know, unfortunately, I think Vince McMahon's a better bad guy than the SEC, but not by much.
No.
So, I will tell you, the issue isn't the bad guy. The issue is the hero. And, you know, if I was going to go wrestling, you would have Vince McMahon. And, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin built his career fighting against the authority, so to speak. And the Big Ten, ACC, and Pac-12 just don't measure up to Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Well, I would say that Greg Sankey's kind of doing the bow-legged Vince McMahon walk right now.
He does have that little bit, like, no chance, you know.
After he acquired Texas and Oklahoma, right? Like that.
And, you know, you got to give him his props because he earned it.
No, yeah.
What do you think of the alliance?
I like – look, Mike, you and I have talked about this. I like the idea. You've been trying to sell me on the idea of trying to get some of those Pac-12 West Coast schools for months now. Like,
yep.
So I like the idea. I think that it has all of the makings of being something that I think can be beneficial for all three conferences and for an ability to basically not allow, if I'm understanding this correctly, the idea basically the premise of this whole thing is basically to not let the SEC and ESPN dominate college sports, essentially.
Which that part of it is brilliant.
Makes all the sense in the world to me, Mike.
That's Delaney in the background as the retired guy going, hey, listen to me, because basically ESPN is going to have to make a choice now.
Right.
You know, because you know, you're now going up against
– We think they're going to have to make a choice. Right now, they don't have to do a darn thing. And the reason they don't have to do a darn thing, and I've written this in a column, it'll be up on Illini Guys if it's not already up now, is there's nothing tangible to this thing yet. Like,
oh, there's a wink and a nudge. Say sure. No more.
Yeah, I mean, when The Athletic comes out and says that something is going to be breaking news, and I'm not criticizing The Athletic. They do a great job. They do solid reporting, and they have solid people. And I am friendly with a lot of the people that they have on their staff.
Yeah, they're good.
I expect more tangible stuff than what I got on Tuesday. Because what I got on Tuesday was 45 minutes of Kevin Warren, Jim Phillips, and the Pac-12 guy declaring their friendship. Like they're best buddies. Like, that's great. I think there could have been a better use of live television time. Like,
did you not get the decoder ring in the mail that lets you know exactly what their real message was?
It's my understanding their real message was, hey, SEC and Greg Sankey, we're really angry at you. Like, and we're not going to let you like basically dictate terms of the party here. That's all fine and good. But Mike, you're a sales guy. You would never have let one of your guys walk into a presentation without a full blown plan as to how this was going to go. Right. Like that's exactly what these three guys did.
I'll tell you, I look at it worse than you. Because who is the biggest threat to the top teams in the AC, causing the top teams in the ACC to leave the ACC? And who's the top threat in getting the best Pac-12 teams to leave the Pac-12?
You tell me.
The Big Ten.
Oh,
because the Big Ten has the best TV contract. It has, or at least it did tell the SEC, but again, the Big Ten hasn't renegotiated yet, but the Big Ten's got a fantastic TV contract. They've got academics that the SEC wishes they had, and people don't understand that the type of research grants that the Big Ten schools get could buy some of the SEC schools. I mean, come on, the dollars, and people don't really get that as big as the dollars are around college football contracts, the it's dwarfed by the research funds that these schools bring in. But the point is that the ACC's biggest concern is who could possibly poach Notre Dame and North Carolina and Duke and Virginia? Or the Pac-12 is thinking, you know, who could take USC, UCLA, Stanford and Cal? It's the Big Ten, because right, those schools don't really want to get associated with the SEC level academics, and they can get what they want from the Big Ten with the big athletic TV contract. So now the Big Ten has effectively found a way to prop up two people who needed propping up, and I'm not certain what they get out of it. This is insane.
The only thing I think that Kevin Warren thinks he gets out of this, and I'm speculating because I have to, because there's no tangible plan to this sucker yet, is that they've said it's not, but I don't trust them. It's a voting block against the 16-member SEC league. So when they vote, so essentially when they vote to change the rules of the college football playoff, they have enough votes to tell the SEC no. We want a 12-team playoff, and you can't just have it be at 4. Like, well, we just want it to be at 8, and you can't have it be at 12 because we know that 8 of those schools are going to be SEC schools. Like, we're going to dictate terms because we have more votes. This now becomes a political game of how many votes do you have? Let's count the votes. Well, here's the problem with that, is that there's still no – like, Greg Sankey went out and he got two schools and he created a more dominant organization for himself and his bosses, who are now the 16 school presidents and chancellors of the Southeastern Conference. Yeah. He has tangibly done something where he can say, look, this is on paper. It's signed, it's sealed and delivered. These three yahoos that stood up on a Zoom meeting on Tuesday have nothing tangible to offer anybody and come back home with anything tangible that says, this is our plan, this is what we're going to do going forward. All they have is this idea that whatever we do, we're going to be all in on it together, except when our friend Jimmy Phillips, a U of I grad, looks above the horizon and then maybe sees, oh, there's a better deal with, you know, maybe like the SEC, or there's a better deal with just using the Pac-12 and just cutting Kevin Warren out of this deal. Like, there's so many different ways that this can go FUBAR so quickly that it's just going to, like, this historic special day, as Kevin Warren called it on Tuesday, can just go up in flames so quickly because you just don't have anything on paper. I have to imagine Josh Whitman sitting in his office in Champaign, a licensed attorney who got his law degree from his alma mater, the U of I, Yep. Sitting there watching Kevin Warren talk about also a licensed attorney who's licensed to practice in three states, talk about how legal contracts really aren't needed in these types of ventures. And I'm pretty sure if he could have, Josh's head would have exploded in his office, because that's just fundamentally like the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And I've run it by one of the most prominent attorneys who's gone after the NCAA and several institutions, athletic departments, Tom Mars. And he told me it was the absolute strangest thing he's ever seen in college athletics. So I'm fundamentally flabbergasted that when there was no gun held to either one of these three men's heads to say you have to go on live television and announce something on August 24th, they did so without a plan and were completely unprepared to tangibly talk about anything that they want to put into this package. Because
don't put the Pac-12 and the ACC in that same category, because they effectively defended their flanks against the one conference that was the legitimate threat. They've now got the Big Ten in a non-growth mode, and they can go, whew, and they can wipe that sweat off their brow, and they can say, now all we got to do is keep the eye on the SEC. We don't fight a two-front war. And I don't know what the Big Ten gets out of this at all, because to me, if the Big Ten could have pulled, you could have pulled four teams from the Pac-12, and you could have pulled, you know, two from the ACC, you go two 10-team conferences, or you put them into four-team, you know, five-team pods, however you want to do it. That's a little bit, needs a little bit more time, but you could have put together a super conference that may not have been exactly on the SEC's level in football, but it would have been close. And then on top of it, you would have had basketball that would be really stacked. And you know, you're keeping it close. And from an academic research standpoint, you get those left coast schools of Stanford, Cal, UCLA, and throw UCLA and USC in there. You get those research ties and you drop them in with the Big Ten, and wow, you're cooking with fire there on a whole other level that has nothing to do with athletics, but helps your university. So all of a sudden, that's gone.
Unfortunately, Mike, this is how this works. This just popped into my head, okay? I heard all three of these gentlemen on Tuesday talk about how they couldn't really announce anything in terms of scheduling because there's contracted conference schedules out all the way to 2035 or whatever it is. And, and let me tell you something. Jimmy Phillips is the one that has all those contracted conference games all the way out to 2035. It ain't the other two.
For his horrible TV contract, yeah.
Exactly. So here's – when I heard that, okay, I said, that's the biggest load of crap I've ever heard in my life, and I'll tell you why. 2020 proved it. We had a 2020 schedule in place, and then COVID happened, and then we had to play football for financial reasons, and by God, they created a schedule like that. Yep. In order for us to play football. You're telling me you couldn't blow up those conference schedules right now in order to do this alliance so you could have a schedule plan and roll it out and have everybody go, wow, this is really cool. We're only going to play schools in these three, all these 41 schools are only going to play each other. And we're going to cut the SEC out and they're going to have to go find their big time non-conference games some other place. And guess what? They're not going to find them. And therefore we are the most powerful entity in collegiate athletics at this point. That would have been really cool. That would have been a tangible thing where you can go, you can take Texas and Oklahoma and yeah, your conference games are going to be really, really strong, but you're not going to get any other non-league games that are going to be worth a darn. Cause we've got a signed agreement here that says we're going to play our games. We're going to play our teams, and you don't even have to figure out the entire schedule all the way out that far. You just have to have a signed agreement that says we're not going to play anybody else other than, you know, the schools that are in this alliance, and you all can figure out what to do outside the alliance, but we don't care. Like, that would have been tangible. That would have been cool. But to sit there and say, well, we have all these scheduling contracts that are already in place and we're not going to, you know, blow those up for this thing. You blew them up for the coronavirus because you needed the money to play football. Like, why aren't you blowing it up for the thing that you think is really, really important on a historic special day? Like, that blew my mind of, once again, if you're going to go on live television for 45 minutes, it would best serve you to have a plan. It would best serve you to be prepared. And once again, Kevin Warren, for the second time in 2021, went in front of a nationally televised audience, because that's this Big Ten thing is on national television, and went in front of a group of media and was just not prepared for what he was presenting at all. And I don't understand, and I'll present it to you like this, Mike, and then I'll let you go. But I present it like this because I think the easy thing, Mike, is to always look at Kevin Warren and go, he's the problem, right? And I've always been a big advocate of Kevin Warren is the face of the 14 people sitting in the back of the Italian restaurant smoking cigars and actually making out policy of how this is going to work. So I present this question to the 14 members of the Big Ten Council of Presidents and Chancellors, which includes U of I Chancellor Robert Jones. What in the cold blue hell did you see out of Kevin Warren that makes you think that this is going well, that this is this that we're on the path of leadership by having him as our commissioner? What do you see that I just don't see?
Yeah, I got to go with you on that one, because I just, again, and I'm not saying
they're the ones, Mike, that are letting this happen. It's not Kevin Warren's, like, you know, he can run roughshod over all this. If those 14 people decide tomorrow that he doesn't need to be the commissioner anymore, that's how it works. Like, and you pay him and you let him go, and that's how this works. But those 14 people think he's doing a Jim Dandy of a job, and I don't see it.
Yeah, well, like I said, the whole president chancellor gig is so much bigger than athletics, and I just think there were ways to capitalize this for the Big Ten. Obviously, I have a bias towards the Big Ten growing up in, you know, Champaign area, but there was so many victories that you could have gotten out of this that are now harder, or you can still attain them, but you run around with blood and knives that you clearly stuck in the back of your supposed allies that taints what you can do. You know, my closing thoughts on this are, this was I'm not saying it was a brilliant move by the ACC or the Pac-12, but it was a necessary move for them. For the Big Ten, I don't even, what are you guys doing? And I know people are going to disagree with me, and that's totally cool. That's what Illini Guys is all about. Go ahead and argue just like you and I are. But this was nuts. I don't get it.
I love the sunset setting on New Year's Day of the mountains going over Pasadena on about 4:30 Central Standard Time. I don't want the Rose Bowl to go away. I don't like it when a Pac-12 and a Big Ten team play in the Rose Bowl. I don't like it personally. But this was not worth it. If what Kevin Warren gets out of this is the preservation of a Rose Bowl game between a Big Ten and a Pac-12 school, it wasn't worth it. And I'm fundamentally running out of ways to try to describe the idea that it's funny, Mike. I was talking about this with my Illini beat writer colleagues one day before a preseason practice, and we were talking about potential, you know, expansion and realignment possibilities for the Big Ten. And the topic came up of Kansas and Iowa State, which is in the Big 12, which, by the way, that comment from, I don't remember if it was Kevin Warren or Jimmy Phillips or somebody that said, we're in favor of the Big 12. We want them to succeed. Well, then why aren't they there? Like, you know, they're your buddy too. Like, why were they cut out of this? Like, that made no sense. You're just saying words, like, but again, the topic came up of Kansas and Iowa State. And my response was, I don't think it's a good idea, but based off of everything that's happened over the last 18 months, it's probably going to happen because I think it's a horrible idea. And I think it'll have horrible ramifications for the league. And that's why I think Kevin Warren and the Big Ten 14 chancellors and presidents will actually do it. And that's a horrible mindset for me to be in for the league that I actually love and actually have passion for.
And that might still be a better idea than what happened today. With that, Matt, I really appreciate you taking the time today, because we took been a long day, and You've basically been willing to sit back and talk about a variety of subjects tonight. So thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Folks, if you enjoyed this podcast, you know, please go ahead and give us 5 stars. That would really help us out. And of course, whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across the United States or halfway across this beautiful planet that we live on, there's only one way to stay in touch with everything Illini, and that's IlliniGuys.com. And on the weekends, please check your local radio listings to see where you can listen to the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. Last week, we had Coach B on. Fantastic interview. This week, Coach Underwood, another fantastic interview. So you're going to get the great guests. You're going to get insightful analysis from Larry. You're going to get it from Brad. You're going to get it when Matt comes on the show. You're going to get it when Kedrick comes on the show, and I'll be on there too. So please make sure that you take the opportunity. And if your local station that you want to listen to doesn't have it, drop them a line. Let them know that we'd like to see, you know, we'd like to hear the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular on your station. So with that, I'm going to thank everybody, and we will see you next time on the Eye on the Illini.